Good day, rescuers, and welcome to the March 2021 edition of Extrication Radio. I'm your host, David Dalrymple, and the topic of this session of Extrication Radio is going to be the EMS role at the motor vehicle crash. Well, most of you are probably thinking right off the bat with saying that, and it's like, Dave, no duh. EMS role is to do patient care. Well, yes and no. They also have a little bit more role in overall things at a motor vehicle crash too, but we're going to talk about what the modern day, meaning now, what their role and responsibilities is in the mitigation of motor vehicle crash overall. And remember, the primary focus and role at a motor vehicle crash is patient-centered vehicle rescue. That goes across the board to everybody's role and responsibilities, including everybody that comes to play on scene. Fire, rescue, EMS, police. Everybody that comes there, their role initially is about patient care. So yes, EMS gets hands-on, gets in there, gets inside the car, gets their hands dirty with the patient, finds out what's going on, what's happening with this patient. Are they sick? Are they okay? Are they able to get out on their own? Are they out walking around the car? And simple, straightforward. Can they just RMA? Are they well enough that they don't need medical attention? You know, there's a whole bunch of areas that we need to take a look at. And what happens with them as a whole. So, just some kind of little things to cover before we get going on our topic tonight. First off, the World Rescue Challenge is being held in November down at Metro Day down in Miami. It's the first week of November, I believe, the 7th through the 11th. It's besides the Extrication Challenge, it is also multidisciplinary, so there's EMS, there's an ALS, BLS trauma challenge, there's a rope rescue challenge, a USAR challenge as well that's going to run with it. 30 teams from 26 different countries around the world, plus an educational track that you want to go there. There's going to be all sorts of different educational programs. I'm one of the people that are going to be facilitating the educational programs, so it's going to be some pretty cool things there. I can tell you that right now. So check it out. With the pandemic, we kind of start to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I saw the news today about 12% of the population getting vaccinations. Our education is going to start to kind of do a little bit more outside and in-person contact, and that's kind of good because a lot of people are tired of Zoom classes and such like that. And some of us that are facilitating Zoom classes also are getting tired of Zoom only. So kind of watch for classes start to come out and about. FDIC is at the end of August, as you've all seen. We're looking forward to that as well. So, let's take a look at this. We all know that the normal EMS response to a motor vehicle crash takes the guise of hands-on patient management and care. Okay, that's a given. So, depending on what the status of how injured the patient is, depends on what kind of care is given. Whether it's BLS care, whether it's ALS care. Bottom line is, good trauma care is good BLS care. It starts out from there. Airway, breathing, circulation, basically good mass hemorrhage care. You can't go any higher than that if you don't have that to start with. And that isn't really able to be delivered unless you actually physically get in there and get hands-on care. And for us, from the rescue team perspective, that needs to be delivered into a car that's safe and is manageable. So that means that, at the very least, the car needs to be safely stabilized and at least a pathway in for our EMS provider needs to be facilitated in some way, shape, or form. Okay, that's not a problem. That can be through a door, through an open door, because we always try and open every door that we can. It can be through an open window or a window opening that we facilitate, glass management-wise. If you remember in the past, one of the things that I talk about a lot now is to remove the fender on the side that the patient is on. And why the fender goes first? Well, for a couple reasons. One, to facilitate looking for that crumple zone relief cut to help remove some of the stored energy in the car. And two, it gives you access to the front door hinge right off the bat, because 99.9% of the time there's going to be a driver as at least one patient that we're going to have to deal with. Okay, so that at least is going to be there, so we can get access to those hinges, whether you spread the hinges apart or you cut them. And to be honest with you, my preference is to cut the hinges today. Most cutters make short work of cutting hinges. That's the technology of cutting hinges. I'm sorry, I should say. The big key point for cutting hinges is make sure your cutter blades go completely around the hinge. Don't stop short. Otherwise, then you're going to tip load the hinge and you have a very good chance of damaging the cutter or the cutter blades. All right? Make sure your cutter blades go completely around the hinge. So that means going past the hinge assembly altogether. All right? This makes the door drop down at an angle. And what you want to do as well, before you finish that bottom hinge cut, you want to take a stress ball and stuff it underneath the door handle. And this is an old school trick type of thing. What it does is it puts tension on the lock. It puts tension on the lock and latch. When you finish both cuts, the door drops down at an angle, which also puts more tension onto the latch. It starts to basically rotate the latch, puts more tension on the latch out of the striker bolt. So you can literally then go up, rotate, or pull on the door handle a little bit more, and most times the door will just come right off, or you can just pick it up and take it away. That's a heck of a lot easier than trying to spread the door up and off and away, where there's a lot more strain and stress on the vehicle and puts therefore more energy onto the patient and such like that. And remember, one of the things you always want to do with when you're doing tool work between you and the patient is make sure you put some sort of cutting shield or tool barrier, some sort of shatter-resistant barrier between you and the patient, okay? Usually some sort of Lexan material or something like that. So that's the other simple pathway. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the pathway to disentangle that patient and bring them out. Today's door openings don't really give you a whole heck of a lot of room. You know, it's not like 20, 30 years ago where a door opening would give you disentanglement space as well. It's not true today. It's kind of like EMS access, and that's about it. It will give you access to see what's going on down in the footwell area, because a lot of entrapments today end up due to the footwell crumpling around people's feet. A lot of entrapments today, because of the dash failing or the footwell failing, ends up around their feet. So you need to kind of have a good look at that area. And that's facilitated by removing the driver's side front door. Now, the rest of any kind of pathway created is all up to what crash damage has been caused in the wreck. You need to read the wreck effectively and what kind of injuries have been done to our patient. Remember, trauma is the disease of time. We know that, and we've heard in the past about the golden hour, and we know now that the whole thing about the golden hour was a fallacy. The whole 60 minutes of time really wasn't true. It was about a shortened period of time. That's what it really comes down to. So the whole mindset of trauma is the disease of time is really more appropriate. Now, one of the things that came about when the car busters were first brought forward. Now, car busters were the very first video series for training of vehicle rescue by Steve Kidd and John Jezikowski. They talked about the golden hour, but then they also talked about the Platinum 10. And what they were talking about when they spoke of the Platinum 10, they were talking about on-scene time. They were talking about an extrication time of your arrival to that patient hitting the street. So they were looking for an extrication time of 10 to 15 minutes. That's the focus of what they were talking about. And that was really the late 80s when when the car busters first came out. Their focus was. And really, that's what our focus should be today. That hasn't changed. That's the direction we really need to head. And that really is a true mindset and goal that we can achieve. We have the tools that are much better than there was out there in the late 80s. One of the things that did change for us, unfortunately, is the cars. The cars are much more difficult to take apart today. And that in itself, too, is a double-edged sword as well. We have more people that can exit the car today that even though the car has been trashed and crumpled up, many more people get out on their own and have facilitated self-extrication today than in the past, which is beneficial for them. That's not a bad thing. But when people get stuck or injured in cars or in vehicles today, it's much more difficult to release them, basically, extricate and disentangle them than in the past. Because we deal with much higher percentages of ultra-high strength material, composites material, and because of the way the material fails around the passenger cell. It's designed to crumple and compress and absorb crash energy so it gets smaller as it goes. So it gets stronger and crushes. And as we all know, when something crushes and gets smaller, it gets more difficult to cut and spread than before. That's why you're seeing power hydraulic rams become more prevalent in our extrication evolutions. Not so much cross ramming, or I shouldn't say it in that way. Cross ramming has become more important in extrication, but also just facilitating using rams to push where spreaders are important, or where spreaders were important in the past. Rams have become more important than spreaders for moving vehicle components, because a ram can truly move things in a straight line with more power, because we need more power to move things. And we also need rams to sometimes shear material apart, basically facilitate moving or shearing higher strength material from lower strength material. And that works very well with rams because of their straight line strength. One of the things that becomes a problem with a hydraulic ram is its footprint on both ends. And there's also items out there that are able to spread that force out better. One of the things that you've seen out there from Homatro, their cross ram pieces. Down south in North Carolina, Toots Lee has a device for rams called the Bulldozer. These are the type of things that are out there that are really becoming more important, because rams need a little help to kind of move that force a little bit over a wider contact space. Okay? Now, along with rams and spreaders, before I bounce off into a different part of this, they're also good for controlled vehicle relocation. Now, controlled vehicle relocation is become more important now because, well, in the past, we were always told that you can't move vehicles. C-spine is critical. You can't move people around. If you move somebody a quarter of an inch, that could relate directly to a spinal cord injury. That's not true anymore. And it probably wasn't true back then either. It was just the way it was facilitated and thought of. There was no research really done to it. Today, meaning the last decade, it was found that if there's going to be a spinal cord injury, it's already happened. The rescue end of things is not going to cause any more damage to that spinal cord injury by the rescue efforts that we do. So one of the things that we can facilitate today that really we didn't even think about, or if we did think about, we were very hesitant to do it, is controlled vehicle relocation. And what that simply is by its name, we're going to move the vehicle to facilitate the rescue easier. For example, the vehicle might be all up against a Jersey barrier, and the driver is there. Well, why can't we just push the vehicle off and away so we have space to work with that driver's side? We'll use a combination of the spreaders and a ram to push the vehicle off and away from the Jersey wall. We wouldn't do that before, or most times we wouldn't try and do that because of spinal concerns. Well, now we can. And we can do it pretty effectively using hydraulic tools. It's really not difficult. And the reason why I include this in the EMS scope of practice here tonight in this is because most EMS people probably do not realize that we can facilitate this now. We can make it easier to get the patient out. We can make it safer to get the patient out this way. Basically, we need to get, and this is true for all of our motor vehicle crashes, is we need to ensure we get the EMS provider inside the vehicle. Don't get lured into the EMS provider showing up and they tell us, we'll see the patient when you get them out. No, 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 no. They need to get PPE on, i.e. a helmet and the appropriate PPE on, and get into the vehicle. That's their job. That's their role. That's their responsibility. They owe it to that patient to get into the vehicle. That's simply put. They should be trained and experienced, even coming out of basic EMT class, to get into the vehicle to do hands-on patient care in the environment. That's the whole premise of being an EMT. That's part of their job and responsibility, is to provide hands-on patient care. Because if we have a change in status, how the heck are we supposed to know that if you're not hands-on care inside the environment? And we have the types of protection to not only protect the patient, but also protect the rescuer inside the car. You know, that's the whole idea of this. You know, one of the ways that we talked about it, and in the programs that we teach, is we teach rescue real estate. Rescue real estate as a methodology to facilitate on-scene care amongst the three emergency services that are going to show up on scene. EMS, rescue, and engine. Okay? We sat down one day and figured out the three roles those three apparatus are going to do, because they're the three prevalent apparatus: EMS, an ambulance; rescue, a rescue truck; engine, an engine company, are going to do when they show up in a motor vehicle crash. EMS, well, they're going to get in inside the vehicle and provide patient care. They're going to get in, do hands-on care, figure out what's going on with the patient's injuries, and relay that information upwards in the command chain. So, real estate-wise, they own the inside of the vehicle, real estate-wise. Then, engine company. Now, the engine company, when they get on scene, they're going to be the incident hazard control. They're going to take care of mitigating any kind of hazards we have on scene. So with the vehicle itself, they're going to take care of power isolation. So they're going to make sure the keys are taken care of, the engines, the power, whatever the engine is secured and shut off. And then they're going to try and take care of disconnecting the 12-volt battery from this vehicle. So they're going to own the front and back of the vehicle. That's their real estate. That's their territory. Because the battery is either going to be in the front or back of the vehicle 95% of the time. So the engine company owns the front and back of the vehicle. That's their real estate. The rescue company comes on scene, and whatever tool evolution they're going to do, whether they're going to do a fender removal, a door removal, a total side removal, a roof removal, or move or displace the dash in some way, they own both sides of the vehicle from the front wheels to the back wheels. That's their real estate. That's their territory. They own that. So if you look, could imagine a vehicle with all those three territories. EMS owns the inside. Rescue owns both sides from the front wheels to the back wheels. And the engine company owns the front and back of the vehicle. Everybody owns their own real estate of that vehicle in direct relation to their job category. Yet, None of them are in each other's way, and they can get the job done quickly, safely. So that's one of the ways that we came up with to devise how all three can do their job safely, quickly, correctly, and not get in each other's way. We came up with that now 15 years ago, and it really works well. So let's go back to EMS working in the environment. Now, today's environment will focus on the driver, because 99.999 you're going to have at least a driver as a patient. And one of the things to remember out of this is vehicle extrication or vehicle rescue is a medical intervention. Now, let me say that again. Vehicle rescue or extrication is a medical intervention. It truly is that. If you don't think of it as that way, and think about that really hard, it truly is. Everybody on scene at a motor vehicle crash is there for a reason. That patient. That's what they're there for. So, EMS-wise, you're there doing hands-on care, primary, secondary, doing patient care, but good trauma care is at a BLS level. We're not talking doing 12 leads or some things like that. If you want to facilitate playing around with the Life Pack 15 or whatever, stick it inside of the car where it's out of the way of everybody else. It's really not effective inside a car with all the kind of noise and tools running and things like that. But what is effective is teamwork with the rescue team, thinking up what the injuries are, what's presented, and how are we going to get this patient out effectively, rapidly, safely. What kind of pathway between EMS and rescue are we going to devise to get this person out? That's important. Now, KED, which you all know from EMT and paramedic classes, is not the user-friendly device for vehicles today. It really isn't. Because a lot of times when you put a KED on a person inside the vehicle, you've entrapped them in that vehicle. It's just not the device that it's made for today. The KD was made for vehicles back in the late 60s, early 70s. That's what it was designed for. They were designed for high headroom and for bench seats. Have you seen a car with a bench seat lately? I haven't. I haven't seen a bench seat in a vehicle other than car shows in 20 years or more on the street. Other than a commercial vehicle. And even commercial vehicles, you don't even see them that much anymore. So, we need to find better packaging devices. Some of the packaging devices that are out there, like a Furno XT or a Speedboard. And again, it's a packaging device. It's made to package somebody to facilitate movement. It's not to stay on them the whole time. That's the whole idea behind this. Is to use that device to package them to facilitate movement. Because a lot of times we need a device to move somebody. Whether it's size, height, position, we really, really need some sort of device that we need to put on somebody and facilitate movement. That's what we're talking about. Now, a Speedboard is fairly inexpensive. It truly is. And you can set it up a bunch of different ways with straps. And we use Speedboard a lot in motorsports. It works extremely well. The Furno XT works extremely well. But it's not cheap. That's the downside of that. Downside of that device. It's made out of carbon fiber, unfortunately. It's lightweight, and it works. It slides in really well, and it's really cool. And it literally is a two-person, you can move just about anybody out with two people. And that's great. But the price isn't that great. That's the downside. Another kind of movement device that works extremely well, and it's from PAX, is their Rescue Boa. Now, their Rescue Boa is basically a 21st century designed towel roll, but it works so much better than a towel roll to move people. It is a really fantastic movement device. It works extremely well. So, it kind of, we picked one up a couple years ago, and it works really, really well. So, that's something to kind of take a look at again, too, is that device. And that's a PAX Boa. It's yellow. You go out to PAX's website to take a look at it. And it's called a Rescue Boa, B-O-A. Okay. Those are some of the packaging devices that over the last couple years we've been able to use effectively and really kind of have given us a new lease on packaging. And able to facilitate things really well because they go on extremely well. They work with today's seats. You know, that's one thing that the KED doesn't work well is on today's seating arrangements. You know, it really, that makes a big difference today is today's seating arrangements. You know, that has really changed a lot. So with packaging in mind and disentanglement, one of the things to think about is, I know that selective spine clearance in the field basically lets you, or as we've seen people go back to the dragging over console type of thing, that, well, you know, it's said that, well, they're not injured spine-wise if we can clear their spine in the field, so we can just drag them across. And one of the things with most vehicles today, we can just drag them across the console. It's not going to hurt them. We're not going to hurt them any further, so to speak. So we can just move them this way. Now, let's think about that. Is that truly professional to truly drag people across objects or over objects? Because if they're hemodynamically stable, their respiratory stable, why do we need to do this? You know, if it's one thing if they're crashing or they're critical, where we need to move them out and we're in a hurry and their life depends on it, that's one thing. But if it's not, why are we doing these things today when we have the right kinds of equipment to create pathways and facilitate disentanglement? Why do we need to do simple things today? Why do we need to make it? Why do we further aggravate a person's injuries by doing silly nonsense? You know, one, it makes us look lazy. Two, it makes us look unprofessional. You know, why do that? I ask colleagues and such, why? Why do this? You know, why do this? Or a lot of times it'll be BLS people that don't, or the rescue team doesn't want to do this, but yet a paramedic will show up and say, "I'll just drag them this way, you don't need to do that." And, or they'll try and impress their, I'm the ALS provider and I say what goes. Well, do you know what the capabilities of proper rescue is and what time it takes? And if you're not willing to get inside and take a look at that patient to see what it is and let the rescue go forward on a fairly stable patient, then if you're not willing to do that, then shut up and wait for the person to get out. There's no reason to say, to stand outside the vehicle and shout orders at people when you don't even know what's going on. There's a difference when you start to be proactive and do proper patient management getting in the vehicle. There's a huge difference here. So, well, that's just food for thought. You know, we've all seen this happen. Probably pretty much all of us have seen this happen at one time or another. You know, and it's frustrating. It's frustrating. You know, it's one thing to, and that comes back to even long spine boards. You know, a backboard or a long spine board, you could still use that to facilitate movement. Just because it's not recommended to transport somebody unless it's warranted, but it's still capable of being used to facilitate movement, and that includes in an extrication environment. So that doesn't mean that it goes away. It still can be there to help move somebody onto the stretcher and then move that device off the stretcher. You know, everybody thinks that because it's not recommended to be transported means you don't use it. No, that's not true. It's still there to facilitate movement. I mean, in some cases, how do you move people any other way? You know, it's the same thing like if you can't use a KED, well, what other options do you have there? Well, the problem is in some places, they don't show anything other than a KED because their local or state EMS board has not allowed any other device to be shown. And yet, it's been that way since, could be from when I first got my first, since I got my first EMT certification back in 81. Yeah. So, I haven't progressed since then. 81 to 2021. That's pretty sad. Things have changed dramatically in that time frame. Yet, there are people that don't change in that time frame. Because, why? Well, I don't know. I don't know. You know, everything needs to be reevaluated in that kind of time frame. Everything should have been reevaluated at least once in that time frame. So, you know, things definitely change, without a doubt. So, think about this. Take this back to your EMS side of your extrication response. Some places in the world, a lot of the EMS side of the barn, so to speak, is pretty proactive about things. They're out there looking at new ways, new concepts, new thoughts, new ways of delivery, and they're pretty much into this. In other places, not so much. You know, I think it's, I live in a country where there is so much and has so much going for it, yet it is so far behind in so many ways because they're stuck on, we've always done it this way, and nobody wants it to change. Nobody wants to go out and look at it and do some research into it. That's part of it. You know, they've done research on how much we actually move people and how much damage we could potentially do. In all reality, that we really don't do that much damage. But maybe, research-wise, maybe we should really do research on if we don't do extrication properly, what kind of injuries do we do? Or outcomes. Maybe if we don't do extrication properly, what kind of outcomes do we get? You know, that's a good possibility. That's something that we should think of down the road. That's a thing that maybe research would show us, that if our extrication is not done properly in the manner of how to deliver it, how to create the right amount of space, and having that right amount of space to do disentanglement, to deliver that patient properly on the street, and do it within 10 to 15 minutes. There's a lot of things and a lot of ways that we can do to get it that way, that we want it to get that way. That's the whole idea. You know, trauma is the disease of time. So we want to make it as short and quick as possible when we get on scene. The other part of this is vehicle rescue or vehicle extrication is a medical intervention. We, by creating the right amount of space in the shortest amount of time, safely, effectively, goes towards creating a better patient outcome. It really does. The problem with it is we don't have the scientific end of things to say so yet. And that needs to come from somewhere. We need to get some money or get a research grant or somewhere. We need to develop that. So we can firmly say, hey, by doing this way, it shows that we do this. And it's the truth. You know, what we're doing as status quo right now is not right. It's not right. So that's what I have for you for today. Think about it, digest it. If you have any feedback or thoughts or questions or comments for me, please feel free. Drop me an email or a tweet. My email address is roadwayrescue@gmail.com or carslayer@roadwayrescue.com. And my Twitter handle is @carslayer or @roadwayrescue, either one. I'd love to hear from you, and I guarantee you I will return your message or your comments, or even if you say, no way, you're stupid, whatever. I have no problem with that. You know, everybody has their opinions and stuff like that. It's always good to hear negative criticism too. So with that, you all be safe. I will have a new session soon.